No matter how many times scientists talk about the dangers of unchecked greenhouse gas emissions and the warming of the planet, there are always people who say, well, not all scientists agree, which is true. But in a show of scientific force, a group of scientists recently published a paper warning of a climate emergency. Now. And they got thousands of scientists to sign their names on the research. The paper is published in a recent issue of the journal Bioscience. Our next guest is one of the principal authors. Dr. William Mumaw is professor emeritus at Tufts University, located in the Medford for which our Medford is named, in Medford, Massachusetts. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Mumaw.
Thank you for having me.
So certainly there have been other warnings from scientists with urgency attached. What led to this effort?
Well, as you know, there is an official process, and I've been part of that. I've participated in five major intergovernmental panel on climate change reports over the years, and that's a very structured process every 5 or 6 years through the United Nations. And we've come to a point. In fact, the last three IPCC special reports all illustrate just how drastically the world and rapidly the world is changing and how that's accelerating. And they're not permitted to make recommendations about what to do. They're just supposed to tell what's happening. So a group of us began to think, well, this really is, from our own research, as well as this other research that's being done by thousands of scientists around the world, this really is serious, and it's beyond crisis. Crisis is an overused word, and we decided to use the term to declare a climate emergency. Emergency connotes we've got to do something rapidly to respond to an emergency. And we put together a draft of a paper and had it go through the peer review process, and then we sent out an email message or something on the internet, and we thought we'd maybe get a few thousand scientists to join us, and 11,000 scientists from 153 countries obviously agreed with what we had said in the paper and signed on, also supporting the notion that we are in a climate emergency.
So the number of scientists who did respond was surprising to you, you're saying?
I would say so. I mean, I know there are a lot of scientists out there because I work nationally and internationally with people, and we all, as the results come in, and they come in through our journals and through conferences and meetings, it's more and more worrisome. It is far more serious, I think, than most government leaders are willing to admit, and we thought they needed to push, and so we pushed.
There is indeed a push here. It's called World Scientists Warning of a Climate Emergency, published in the November 5th edition of Bioscience. The authors are our guest, William Mumaw, along with William Ripple, Christopher Wolf, Thomas Newsom, and Phoebe Barnard. Early in the paper, there's a mention of how often surface temperatures are mentioned in discussions of climate change, and it says that's an inadequate measure. Why?
Well, first of all, it's a relatively insensitive measure. The temperatures rise every year by, hundredths of a degree or so. It doesn't rise very rapidly. And the average global temperature is very misleading because, for example, the Arctic is warming 3 or 4 times faster than the average is warming. And what determines our weather patterns is the difference in temperature between our mid-latitudes and the Arctic. And so in the past, the Arctic was colder, but it has warmed more rapidly. And therefore, the temperature difference between the Arctic and our latitudes is less. And that's caused things like the jet stream to meander much more, to be less well-defined, and to stagnate instead of moving around the world. These loops that you see on the weather reports of the jet stream, when the jet stream loops upward, we get warmer air from the south. When it loops downward, we get colder air. And those loops down are now coming down much further. So we're having situations of, you know, snowfall in Texas and so on, and everybody says, well, how can we have that when it's warming? Well, it's because we're just dumping a fixed amount of cold air, redistributing it into the middle of the country instead of keeping it in the Arctic.
So really, a scrambling of the planet's systems is a good way to describe this.
That's right. It's much more than just warming. The warming is the initial thing that's happening, obviously, but that is changing everything. It's changing ocean currents. It's changing atmospheric circulation, and therefore we're having periods of long drought in some places and intense downpours in others. It's just shifting the pattern of and intensifying the pattern of weather events.
William Mumaugh, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, professor emeritus at Tufts University in Massachusetts. He's one of the principal authors of World Scientists' Warning of a Climate Emergency, which got signed on by 11,000 scientists around the world. You can join the conversation by email only. I don't have a phone person to answer things today. You can join us at jx@jeffnet.org. So we talked about surface temps not or an inadequate measure, anyways, what the report reads.
I mean, they're not insignificant.
Sure.
I don't wish to say they're not worth anything.
But what I'm looking for is a better measure, then, or a set of them.
Exactly. It's a set. There's no single measure that's going to do the whole thing. I mean, we could be using Arctic sea ice disappearance. We could be using the melting of Greenland. We could be using the melting of Antarctica. We could be using the frequency of droughts or the intensity of rainfall in one event. All of those are indicators that the climate has indeed changed dramatically.
Well, there are a lot of charts and graphs in the paper, some of them fairly shocking, and I have to believe that tree cover loss graph is one of the more concerning.
It is very concerning, absolutely. What we decided is that we needed multiple metrics, if you like. We need multiple measures to look at things because some things are more sensitive than others, and we don't always know exactly which ones we ought to be paying attention to. And so we thought, let's gather a bunch of these. And of course, since we've published this, we thought, oh, we should have added this and we should have added that. And in the future, we will do that as we update these, because our intention is to update these every year because they all are from sources that are updated every year. And if we can update them and put them all in one place, then people can look at it and we can see whether we're making any progress or not.
Let me stick with trees and deforestation, obviously a constant concern in our part of the country. There's a reference to decelerated forest loss in the Amazon basin, and I have to believe that you did most of the work on this research before Jair Bolsonaro's election as Brazil's president and his more or less encouragement of forest clearing.
That's exactly right. You notice on that there's a little uptick at the end of the last few years. I mean, it was really quite impressive, the drop by more than half in a period from between 2000 and 2010. So that's what we were referring to. Then it levels out and starts ticking up. And if we were to do, I'm sure when we do all of 2019, it's going to be substantially higher. And so that's disappointing. That's very disappointing, right? And we know exactly in this case we can track the social and political and economic reasons that it's happening.
So, William, the 40 years of warnings you point out in the research and largely business as usual on the planet, that is the term you use, what do you suppose causes people to just go on as they were?
Well, you know, it's very hard to accept that the world is not the way it was yesterday. You know, we make all our decisions incrementally. And that can be, we'll do what we did last year, we'll do what we did yesterday, we'll do what my father did, we'll do what my grandfather did, we'll do whatever it is. We have built our whole civilization on the assumption that the world will be pretty much the same tomorrow as it was yesterday. And that's just not the case anymore. The one thing we're certain of is that the world is changing rapidly. And so the way we build our buildings, the way we design our cities, the way we manage our agriculture, the way we do transportation, none of that can be based on the past, because the past is not the present or the future. I mean, California has had fires in the past, but they've never had fires like they have now. Australia has had fires in the past, but they've never had fires and had the droughts and then the fires that they're having now. Think of the flood events when Hurricane Harvey hits Houston. What did they get? They got
the 50 plus inches, which is about 3 years worth of rain for Medford, Oregon.
Yeah, right. I mean, they got that in 1 or 2 days. That has never happened before. And what's interesting is the weather people all said that's because it was trapped between two stationary fronts. Well, why were there stationary fronts that were there for so long? It's because the jet stream has changed. I mean, and there's more moisture in the atmosphere because of warming. There's more water evaporated from the oceans. It's in the atmosphere. So these are all measurable things. We could have added those metrics on here as well, I guess. And by the way, almost all of most of the things that are happening right now were predicted qualitatively, not quantitatively, but qualitatively, starting 40 years ago. It's really quite remarkable. There's a report that came out in 1987 that, I mean, there's hardly anything, there's nothing in there that hasn't happened.
Wow. So you pointed out that the IPCC reports don't make recommendations, but there are some timelines contained in some of them, and I have to believe we're way behind those at this point.
We are way behind those, in other words, for political reasons, the scientists are not supposed to make recommendations of what to do. They can assess the effectiveness of actions that have been taken. But then they can't say, you know, we ought to have a carbon tax, or we ought to get rid of coal plants, or we should stop the cutting of our forests, or whatever you might want to say. That's not allowed under the IPCC rules. One of the reasons for doing this is we as scientists are not constrained by those rules. We can simply look at the science and say, this is what it implies for us. These are the areas that we have to take, where we have to take action.
William Mumaugh is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, recommending action along with four other scientists as the principal authors of a paper called World Scientists Warning of a Climate Emergency, published November 5th in the journal Bioscience and signed on to by more than 11,000 scientists across the world. Questions, comments, welcome via email at jx@jeffnet.org. There's a section I had a question about in the paper, which is about the we need to promptly reduce the emissions of short-lived climate pollutants, including methane, black carbon, and hydrofluorocarbons. What are the particular impacts of those? Methane we know about. It's a bad climate gas, greenhouse gas.
Right.
But what about the other two?
Well, the other two are black carbon is basically soot. And that's a fancy name for soot. It's diesel engines put it out a lot. So big, you know, buses and trucks and things put it out. And the coal-burning power plants put it out. Burning wood for electricity puts out even more of it, and finer particles, which are more serious for our health. And what black carbon is doing, it's appearing on, it's amazing. For example, the large amount of black carbon that's emitted in India is being deposited on the glaciers and snow in the Himalayas. The black carbon that's being emitted from North America is ending up being deposited in the snows of the Arctic. And you can, it, you know,
it travels
take a lot
quite
of
a bit. Yeah.
It travels a long distance. And so it doesn't take much imagination to realize that black dust on snow traps heat and melts the snow and ice much more rapidly. So it has an outsized impact for the amount of it that there actually is.
And how about the hydrofluorocarbons? I want to move on to the hydrofluorocarbons.
Sure. What those are, those were chemicals that were put in place to replace the ozone-depleting chemicals.
The CFCs. These are HFCs.
The CFCs. Yeah. Right, right. It turns out that the HFCs are very strong global warming gases. And the good news is, I think it was 2 years ago at a conference in Kigali, Africa, in Rwanda, it was decided by governments that we would phase those out. And it was actually the ozone treaty that did that, because the climate treaty has not been able to be organized enough to deal with these things. So the ozone people said, we created this problem, we should solve it, and they agreed to do it. All the U.S. manufacturers of HFCs have called upon the President and the Congress to submit it, for the President to submit the treaty to the Congress and for the Senate to ratify it. And that has not happened. And we are one of the only big manufacturers of these chemicals who has not done so.
So you got 11,000 signatories to this paper. Is it enough, yeah, do you think?
Well, I know there are more who wanted to sign it but couldn't sign it by the deadline. I'm not sure what we're going to do for an encore here, other than we're going to try to keep this moving forward to keep adding additional metrics and measurements here, signposts, if you like, milestones, whatever you want to name them, and to keep these up to date. I think what it's done is it is given a lot of individual scientists an understanding that they're not alone in their concerns. And therefore, this might lead to, more and better research, more and better engagement of scientists with the policy process. We wanted, in a way, what we were doing is sampling scientific opinion, if you like, an understanding of the climate issue and the levels of concern. And what we found out is there's a lot of it.
Indeed. We only have about a minute left here. I did want to ask about if it's too big for some people to comprehend, if they just can't figure out what they can do.
Well, there's a lot that we can do. I mean, one of the items in here is food. It turns out that agriculture is a major contributor to climate change, and it's because of the kinds of food we eat. We eat a very large amount of meat, and ruminant animals emit a lot of methane. And there are perfectly healthy diets that would greatly reduce the amount of meat that we eat.
The paper is certainly available online for people to take a look at. It's called World Scientists Warning of a Climate Emergency, published November 5th in Bioscience. William Ripple, Christopher Wolf, Thomas Newsom, Phoebe Barnard, and our guest from Tufts University in Massachusetts, William Mumaw. Dr. Mumaw, thank you so much for sharing the time and the information with us.
Well, I greatly appreciate your sharing this with your listeners.